From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. Welcome to another hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. We'll open the program this time with an episode of Philo Vance. This syndicated detective series ran from 1948 to 1950. It starred Jackson Beck. Jackson Beck, well-known voice artist and film actor, was featured as part of many series during radio's golden era. He's probably best known as the announcer for the original Adventures of Superman. Some of his other radio work included Mert and Marge, The Cisco Kid, March of Time, Brownstone Theater, and even the CBS Radio Mystery Theater in the 1970s. He also was the voice of many cartoon characters on television and in the movies. He was Bluto in the Popeye theatrical shorts in the 1940s, for example. This broadcast is from April 12th of 1949, program number 40 in the Philo Vance series. It's entitled The Green Girl's Murder, an episode of Philo Vance on the Upstate Radio Theater.
Anything else, Mr. Vance?
Not that I can think of at the moment, Miss Williams. Let me know when Miss Deering comes in, will you please?
Yes, sir. Oh, it's time for the news, Mr. Vance. Shall I turn on the radio?
It's the only way I know of that I can hear the news, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Here we are.
Mr. Markham didn't call this morning, did he, Miss Williams?
Why, no, sir. We haven't heard from the district attorney since the movie murder case, Mr. Vance. I guess he must be busy, huh?
I guess so.
And that's the news from Washington. On the local scene, police are baffled over a mysterious murder that occurred about midnight last night. Jane Green, daughter of wealthy merchant Eric Green, was found stabbed to death near her home. Neither her distraught parents nor her sister Penny could advance a motive for her death. Police Sergeant Heath has all available men working on the case. Although lack of clues may hinder their operation, Heath disclosed. Other local
news. Please turn that off, Miss Williams.
Includes the finding of a kitten.
Another murder, huh, Mr. Vance? And the radio said that the police are baffled.
The police aren't the only ones, Miss Williams. I'm a little puzzled myself. You're sure Mr. Markham didn't phone me?
I'm positive. You could call him, you know, Mr. Vance.
Yes, I know, but... Oh, don't bother, Miss Williams. I'll get it.
Oh.
Vance speaking.
Hello, Vance. Markham.
Well, how are you, my friend? I rather expected this call, but I expected it earlier.
What do you mean?
I just heard over the radio about the mysterious murder of Jane Green. I understand there are no clues.
Well, Yes, that's right, Vance, but some will turn up. They always do, you know. But I just called to check with you and tell you I'll be busy on this case for some time, so we won't be able to get together.
Well, Markham, don't you...
Don't I want you to work on this case, Vance? I don't think so. Sergeant Heath and his men will find something. Thanks just the same, Vance. I'll be talking to you. Bye.
Goodbye.
What are you thinking about, Mr. Vance?
Miss Williams, Mr. Markham doesn't want me on this case. He has a reason, he thinks. But I think I know what that reason is.
Desk, Daniels.
Joe, this is McNamara. Give me a rewrite, man. I've got something hot.
Give it to me, Mac. I'll take it.
Get ready. Here it is. I'll give it to you fast. You can check me for spelling when I'm finished.
Shoot.
While police were combing the city for the mysterious slayer of 20-year-old Jane Green, the killer struck again. Penny Green, older sister of the dead girl, was murdered in the identical manner.
I got it.
Her body discovered by a passerby in an alley near the Green Mansion.
Yeah?
A singular feature of the killings, aside from the fact that a knife was used in both instances, was the fact that neither of the victims wore any makeup whatsoever. The meaning of this clue, if it is a clue, is still vague, Sergeant Heath of the Homicide Department admitted. That's all so far.
I got it, Mac. You don't have to check for spelling. Better keep on the yarn. It's page one. We'll shoot whatever you give us into the later editions.
Right. Okay, Joe, you know what happens if the cops turn up the killer.
I know, Mac. You'll call me back.
We'll be right back.
Look, Heath, I don't want to be hard-boiled, but there must be something on those two murders that you've turned up. You've been working on them all day.
Oh, I'm sorry, D.A. I've had men all over the greenhouse. I've had them checking the lives of those two girls. Something will crack.
Something better, Heath. Eric Green is an important man. Have you spoken to him?
Well...
Have there been any threats made against him or his family?
He and his wife have been under a doctor's care, but I got to him for a while. Now, nobody tried to hold the guy up for dough, and he can't give us any leads at all.
Heath, we've got to find that murderer and find him fast. It looks like whoever it is wants to wipe out the entire Green family. You've got to get me some action.
Well, we're working, D.A.
Work harder, then. Get me some results.
Look, D.A., how is it you haven't brought in your friend Philo Vance on this case?
Never mind how it is. This is a police case, and you represent the police department.
Well...
That's all, Heath. Call me if anything breaks.
Okay, Mr. Markham, but I still don't know why you didn't call in Vance.
You know something, Daddy?
What?
I just seem to fit into your arm. Isn't that wonderful?
What's wonderful about it? I tried you for size before I decided you'd be my girlfriend. Nice party?
Why, you throw the best parties in town, Daddy.
What's with this daddy business? Am I old enough to be your old man?
Oh, Daddy, you're so silly. When I call you Daddy, I don't mean Daddy. I mean Daddy.
Okay, so I'm Daddy. Hey, Peggy, how about a dance with the company, huh? Hey, everybody. Peggy's gonna dance.
Oh, please, Daddy, not now, huh? Later. All right.
It's up to you, baby.
Hey, everybody. Peggy's gonna dance first. Later.
Ah, thanks, Daddy, darling. I just like it here with you. It's so cozy.
Cozy in a joint with 20 people?
Uh-huh.
I don't know how you figure that, but it's okay with me. You know, I've been wanting to ask you something, Peg. How'd you like a job in that place I run?
Me, in a gambling house? But what could I do?
Look pretty. Take the suckers' minds off the dough they lost. What about it?
Oh, sounds good, Daddy. I'll let you know. Now, suppose you let me know something.
Anything, baby. What's bothering that pretty blonde head of yours?
What I want to know is why you threw this party. What are we celebrating?
What are we celebrating? We're celebrating the death of two dames, Jane and Penny Green.
Mrs. Green, where are you?
Over here, Jim. I'll keep the lights dim so as not to disturb Mr. Green. Come over.
Thanks, Mrs. Green. How is he?
He isn't too well. The shock of what happened to Jane and Penny has done something to him, the doctor says. He's resting in the next room now. If we don't talk too loud, we won't disturb him.
I just came in to see if there was something I could do, Mrs. Green.
Oh, thank you, Jim, but there isn't anything. I know how you must feel. You were practically a member of our family.
A few more months and I would have been. This awful thing hadn't happened to Jane.
Yes.
2 months more, and we'd have been married. I can't believe all of this.
I can't either. It's very hard for all of us. I loved those two girls. They couldn't have been closer to me if I'd been their real mother.
I know, Mrs. Green. Both of them used to say that all the time. Please ask me if there's anything you want me to do, will you?
Oh, thanks, Jim. I just can't get over how this all happened. Eric and I were sitting here playing chess. We thought Jane was in her room. Then the phone rang, and it was the police telling us what had happened.
I wasn't supposed to see her last night. She said she was spending the evening at home with you.
I know. That's why Dad and I didn't go out at all. We were here all evening together. Oh, Jim, who could it be who's trying to wipe out our family?
I don't know, Mrs. Green. But I promised myself something, though. I won't do any sleeping until the murderer of your daughters is caught.
Still nothing, Heath. What are you doing, man?
I'm sorry, D.A., but you told me to call in and report, so I'm calling in and reporting. But I haven't got anything new to tell you.
We're checking every angle.
You're not talking to the newspapers, Heath. You're talking to me. I not only want to know what you're doing, I want to know what results you're getting. Remember that.
Well, how can you get results when you can't get any clues? Answer me that.
I don't know, Heath. If I did, I'd be doing it myself.
I wish you were doing it yourself. Okay, D.A., I'll call you back.
Goodbye. How can you get results when you can't get clues?
Hello, Markham.
Vance. Vance, you're just the man how are you?
Well, I think I'm all right. That is, I was all right until I didn't hear from you in the Green Sisters' murders.
Oh, that, Vance. We're doing pretty well with that, thank you. I just didn't think I ought to bother you.
Bother me, Markham? Oh, come now. You know how I feel about murder cases, especially those that are so completely puzzling.
We'll find out who killed the Green girls, Vance. Thanks for your interest, but we'll find out for ourselves. I'm a little busy now, so if
Markham,
you don't mind...
I just called the newspapers and told them that I was working on the case.
You did what? You couldn't, Vance.
Why not?
Because that's the one thing I didn't want to happen.
Well, it's happened. So I don't believe there's anything you can do about it.
But, Vance, you don't know what you've done.
I think I do. Markham, my friend, I appreciate what you tried to do. Somebody called you and told you that if you called me in on these killings, they'd kill me.
You know that?
I reasoned it. Right after the first murder, you got a phone call threatening my life. If that somebody had threatened yours, you'd have laughed at him and hung up. But you couldn't take a chance with my life.
The caller pointed out that he wasn't asking me to do anything that was against my oath as a district attorney. I debated quite a while.
I'm sure you did. That call you got was very complimentary to me. Was it a man or a woman?
Well, it was hard to tell, Vance. Whoever it was used a handkerchief over the telephone mouthpiece and disguised the voice. You know, of course, I'm glad you figured out why I didn't call you. You're not worried about that threat?
Hardly. Markham, I've read up on this case and I know the important facts. That the two sisters were killed in the identical manner. That neither wore makeup. That one of the sisters was engaged to a man named Jim Manning.
Yes, Vance?
I'll tell you this. Jane, the first girl killed, was called out of the house by somebody she trusted. Somebody who said it was urgent. The lack of makeup is that clue, Markham. Jane Green would never have left the house without taking time to put on makeup if she hadn't known the caller and he hadn't said to hurry.
And the other sister, Penny, she was called out by the same person on the same urgent pretext?
I'm not so sure about that.
But Vance, Penny had on no makeup either. You said yourself there was no other reason you could think of except an emergency message.
Yes, I did, didn't I? Well, Markham, there is one other reason. Only it applies to Penny and not Jane. If it's all right with you, I'm going up to see Mr. and Mrs. Green. I promise you some action on these two killings, Markham, and I won't be too long in keeping that promise.
City Desk, Daniels.
Joe, this is Mac.
Yeah?
I got an ad to the Green Sisters murder case.
Go ahead.
Philo Vance, brilliant private investigator whose keen mind has helped the police on numerous criminal cases, has entered the Green Sisters murder case.
Right.
Vance, in a specially prepared statement, declared that while he has no definite clue to the slayer of the two girls, he is confident that there will be a break in the case within 24 hours.
I got it.
District Attorney Markham, who previously had declined to state why he had not asked his friend Vance to investigate the murder, said to this reporter, hey, I do get a byline, don't I, Joe?
The byline runs for the rest of the story, Mac.
Yeah, just want to be sure. District Attorney Markham said to this reporter, quote, Vance is confident that he can break the case in 24 hours. Well, that's it, Joe.
Vance made a crack like that?
Mm-hmm.
Before he even started working on the case?
That's right. It's a direct quote. But don't ask me how he expects to crack it. All I know is that if Philo Vance says he'll do it, he'll do it.
This is District Attorney Markham. The Green Girls murder case opened with the finding of the body of Jane Green, daughter of wealthy Mr. and Mrs. Eric Green. The next day, Penny Green was found, murdered in the identical manner as her sister. Philo Vance entered the case this afternoon, and after a talk with me, went immediately to the Green home where he was to meet Sergeant Heath. Heath and Vance should be together about now because it is...
Want to see Mr. and Mrs. Green now, Vance?
No, Sergeant Heath, not at the moment. Whose room is this?
This was Penny's room. Why?
I'd like to see it.
There's nothing in it that'll help you, except her diary. Well, come on in. And there are the lights.
Thank you. You think the diary will help me?
Yeah. Who knows what'll help you? Here it is, over on this dresser.
Oh, yes, of course. I'd like to take a look through this.
Help yourself.
Went shopping this morning with Jay. Lunch with Jay. Matinee. Good show. Home. That's the last entry. Made the day of her sister's murder.
Yeah. She and her sister went everywhere together. Her sister's name is Jane.
Yes, I know, Sergeant. Nothing else in here you think might be helpful?
Not a thing.
Well, I'll take your word for it. You're a very thorough police officer, Heath.
Thanks, Vance. Now, where to now?
I thought I might like to talk to Mrs. Green. I understand she's taking this better than her husband.
Yeah, well, she's in here. It's a kind of a sitting room. You want me in with you?
Not unless you want to come.
I'd just as soon not. I've questioned her till I'm blue in the face. I'll see you, Vance.
Come in.
How do you do, Mrs. Green? I'm Philo Vance.
Oh, hello, Mr. Vance. I've been reading about you in this paper. Do you really think you can find out who killed my daughters?
I'm going to try, Mrs. Green. I may need a little help, though.
Well, tell me what you want to know.
Thank you. To begin with, I understand your two daughters were very close.
Yes, they were.
Both of them favorites of their father?
Both of them.
What about Jane's boyfriend, the lad she was engaged to?
Jim Manning? Well, what do you want to know about him? He and Jane were very much in love.
I see, Mrs. Green. I'm sorry if this sounds awkward, and I know it will, but where were you at the time Jane was killed?
At home, here with my husband. We didn't leave the house all evening. Sergeant Heath checked that with Mr. Green and the servants.
I'm going to tell you why I asked. You see, Mrs. Green, there was a possibility, a remote possibility, of course, that you might have wanted your stepdaughters dead.
I, Mr. Vance?
I said it was a remote possibility. The reason might have been this. While they were alive, they would share in Mr. Green's money in the event that he died. I understand he isn't too well. With them dead, you'd get it all.
I see what you mean. I'm sorry, Mr. Vance, but I'm afraid you're going to have to look elsewhere for your killer. I was at home. Five people know I was here.
Six. I believe that now.
Thank you.
Mrs. Green, please forgive these wandering eyes of mine, but your purse is open and there's a very strange disc on top of the handkerchief in your pocketbook. What is it?
It's a chip, a poker chip. Mr. Green and I used to have poker parties here once in a while, and, well, I needed some extra chips. I was going to have that one matched.
I see. And your husband's name is Eric Green.
Yes.
The initials on the poker chip are M.G. Mistake, perhaps?
The first initial? Oh, yes.
I didn't mean the initial, Mrs. Green.
What is it?
Well, sliding panels in the doors. This is really a gambling house, isn't it?
What's it to you?
My name is Vance, Philo Vance. I'd like to see the owner of this place. I understand his name is Gibson. Mike Gibson?
He ain't in. Get lost.
My good man, it took me 2 hours to find out what individual whose initials were M.G. operated a gambling house. I assure you, I won't leave until I see him.
So wait. See what good it does you.
Oh.
What's the trouble, Tommy?
Guy named Vance. Philo Vance. He wants in. I don't know him. He don't get in. Them's your orders.
Philo Vance? Open the door, Mike. We're glad to have him with us.
Okay, you're the boss. Come on in.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Gibson, for giving your man here permission to let me in.
That's all right, Vance. What's on your mind?
Can we talk here?
Here, out in the gambling room, in my office, anywhere you like.
Your office, then.
Right this way. Bet a quarter I know why you're here, Vance.
Gambling isn't my line, Mr. Gibson.
I don't generally bet either. Betting is for suckers. I like to let them think they can beat percentages. They can't, but they get a whole lot older and a whole lot poorer before they learn. In here. Make yourself comfortable, Vance.
Well, thank you. I will.
Now, Vance, you're here because of some connection between this joint and the murder of those Green kids. That's what you think, right?
That seems a reasonable assumption. You know I don't gamble. You've read I was working on the murders. Yes, that's right, Mr. Gibson. Tell me, did the Green sisters gamble?
You know, all of a sudden, I don't hear so good.
Did Mrs. Green gamble?
My hearing ain't a bit better. How do you account for a thing like that?
What is your connection with the murder of the Green girls?
Connection? I got no connection.
Hey, Daddy, there's a... Oh,
I'm sorry, Daddy. I didn't know you were busy.
See you in a little while, Peggy.
Okay, but...
Just a minute, please.
Oh, you want to see me?
Yes. My name is Vance. You work here?
Look, Vance, Peggy doesn't know anything about this case.
Of course I don't. What case?
Never mind.
You had a message to deliver to Mr. Gibson just now, Peggy.
Sure, he's supposed to call Plaza 81561.
Oh, isn't that the number of the Green residence, Mr. Gibson?
I wouldn't know. So long, Peggy.
She's not leaving. Unless you prefer I talk to her outside.
Talk to her anywhere you like. We've got nothing to hide. Personally, I got some business to take care of. Tell him anything he wants to know, Peggy. As if you knew anything.
Well?
Oh, he's the nicest daddy.
All right, Peggy, let's drop the act.
Huh?
What's your connection with the Green Girl's murder case?
Hey, look, Vance, don't go tying me up with any murder rap. I'm a girl just trying to get along. I don't mess with killings.
What about Gibson?
I don't mess with killers either. I know better.
I don't doubt it. The trouble is, Peggy, that perhaps you don't know enough.
Hello there, Vance.
Hello, Markham. I hope I didn't keep you waiting long. I've just come from a very enlightening meeting with a gambler named Gibson and his girlfriend. Where's Mrs. Green?
In her room next to her husband's. She rarely leaves it, Vance. I told her you were coming, and she said to go right in when you came.
Well, then let's go. Good evening, Mrs. Green.
Oh, how do you do, Mr. Vance? Hello again, Mr. Markham.
Hello.
Mrs. Green, I know you'll be very interested in who killed your daughter, so I thought I'd come up to tell you this in person. Is Mr. Green awake?
Why, no, he's asleep in the next room. The door's open, so please don't raise your voice if you can help it.
I rarely raise my voice, Mrs. Green. What I wanted you to know was this. I've just been to see a gambler named Gibson. That name mean anything to you?
Why, no, it doesn't.
Good. The police have Mr. Gibson's telephone lines tapped. They can listen to any calls that come to him. In an hour, there'll be a cordon around the block to intercept anyone who tries to get to Mr. Gibson.
You better make that 2 hours, Vance. There are a lot of preparations for what you want.
In 2 hours, then. Now, Mrs. Green, I want you to do something for me.
Yes?
Get on the telephone and tell Jane's fiancé, Mr. James Manning, exactly what I told you. But add this fact, that Mr. Gibson told me that if I came back this evening, he'd tell me what I want to know about the murder of your two girls.
Awful weather, Vance.
Awful. It's miserable. It's raining cats and dogs.
Yes, it is, Sergeant Heath. We're lucky we have this doorway to shelter us.
Do you mean to tell me that that little black door across the street there leads to a gambling joint, Vance?
It leads to Mr. Mike Gibson's gambling house, Sergeant. Very swanky, too, believe me.
Yeah, I believe you when I see who else it is you expect to drive up there. And Jim Manning was there, but he couldn't get in. How long do you expect?
There's somebody, Vance.
That car and headed right for the door. I'm an old fella. Hey, that's Mr. Green.
Yes, it is.
Is that our suspected murder events?
I'll let you know in a minute, Markham. Want to see if he gets into the gambling house.
He's arguing with the guy at the door. The guy just closed the slide in his face. There goes Mr. Green back in his car.
You can forget about Mr. Green, Markham. He isn't involved in those murders.
Well, then who is?
I think I know who is, but I'll be certain in a few minutes.
Hey, what was that Green guy doing out here? He's supposed to be in bed.
I can explain that, I think, later.
There's another car at the door, Vance. Oh, no, it's a cab.
Hey, a woman's getting out. She just made a beeline for that door.
Can't blame her much in this weather, can you, Sergeant?
Well, I guess not. There's that guy sliding open that peephole. Hey, he's letting her in.
That's all I wanted to know. Sergeant Heath, you can arrest Mrs. Green for murder.
Oh, wait a minute, Vance. When her daughter Jane was killed, we know for a fact that she was in her house.
She was, Markham. But I repeat, you can arrest Mrs. Green for murder.
City desk, Daniels.
Mac, Joe.
Yeah?
Green sister's case is cracked.
Oh, yeah?
I just came from an interview with Philo Vance. Get this and get it quick.
Go ahead, Mac. Talk.
I'll take it from the top. Going way back, Penny Green, that's the second sister who was killed, wanted to marry Jim Manning. That was Jane's fiancé.
How did Vance figure that?
The initial J in Penny's diary. All along, they took it for granted that that meant Jane. But Vance figured it stood for Jimmy, and he checked.
I got it.
Jim told Vance he'd had a lot of trouble with Penny because apparently she was in love with him. He went shopping with Penny to buy a present for Jane.
That explains the diary notation, eh?
Right. The rest of this is a quote from Vance. Quote, at midnight on the murder night, Penny called her sister out of her house, saying it was urgent. Jane left, and Penny killed her. End quote.
Penny killed Jane?
Mm-hmm.
Then why did they arrest Mrs. Green?
Quote from Vance. It was Mrs. Green who killed Penny. She realized what had happened, and she owed a great deal of money to Mike Gibson. She saw a way of getting rid of Penny so that she, Mrs. Green, would own the entire Green estate when Eric Green died, end quote.
What about Mike Gibson?
Vance says it was probably he who suggested that Mrs. Green kill Penny in the same way that Jane was killed to make the police think that one murderer was at work. It was he, too, who undoubtedly called Markham to keep Vance off the case, Vance thinks.
What goes with old man Green?
Eric Green was not asleep when Vance asked his wife to call Jim Manning earlier this evening. He heard Vance say that Mike Gibson knew who killed his daughters, so he wanted to find out who it was.
Yeah?
That's why he went to Gibson's place.
Only couldn't get in.
Which convinced Vance he hadn't been there before. You see, Vance thought it might have been he who owed Gibson the money.
I see.
He never was certain that it was Mrs. Green until she got in the gambling house without any trouble. Final quote from Vance.
Yeah.
Quote, this was all a very clever scheme on the part of Mrs. Green and Gibson.
Uh-huh.
Undoubtedly, they figured on doing away with Mr. Green eventually, and that would leave Mrs. Green with all the money and Gibson with his outstanding gambling debt collected.
Yeah, yeah.
After Penny set the stage by murdering her sister under the impression that that would induce Jim Manning to eventually marry her, end quote. Well, that's 30, Joe.
Got it. Well, it was a good scheme, I guess, but it sure came to a bad end for Mrs. Green.
Yeah, but it's a good end for the Green Girls murder case.
From April 12th of 1949, Jackson Beck, starring as Philo Vance, The Green Girls Murder, a syndicated broadcast. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from the golden age of radio coming to you from the Finger Lakes region of upstate New York. I'm Jake Longwell. If you'd like to get in touch with the program, please feel free to do so at any time. Our email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And please visit our website for more info about the show, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. We'll turn to some Western adventure to wrap up the hour, as we have an episode of The Six Shooter, a short-lived, more adult-oriented Western, which ran on NBC Radio in the mid-1950s. It starred James Stewart, better known as Jimmy Stewart, as Britt Ponsett, Texas plainsman and drifter. This was Stewart's only recurring radio role. This broadcast first aired on NBC on May 13th of 1954, and in addition to James Stewart, you'll also hear in the cast Parley Bear and Howard McNear, both of whom, of course, were quite busy at the time on another outstanding adult Western series on CBS, that being Gunsmoke. But here they are as part of the cast of this episode of The Six Shooter, entitled Ranchers vs. Sodbusters.
In a moment, you'll hear James Stewart as The Six Shooter, just one of the many fine programs brought to you each week on NBC. Tomorrow night, there's top comedy entertainment with The Bob Hope Show, The Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, and Can You Top This with Senator Ford. Bob Hope delivers rapid-fire comedy routines, while Phil Harris and Alice Faye bring you both mirth and music. It's a great Friday night lineup of comedy programs, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as The Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl. Its handle, unmarked. People call them both The Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as The Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Grit Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends.
Halfway Creek sure wasn't much of a town. Oh, that general store and cafe, room and house, and a blacksmith shop. That's about all there was to it. And I'd never figured out where the place got its name, either. It didn't seem to be halfway to anything. As a matter of fact, it was right at the end of the trail from Santa Fe. The only thing further west was a couple of small farms and Gid Bascom's 77 Ranch. That's where I was heading, the 77, to see if I could sign on with Gid for the spring roundup. Oh. Wow, it didn't look like I was going to have to ride out all the way. Oh, boy. Oh. Yeah. Oh, there was Gid himself pounding down the main street, five or six fellows behind him. Well, if he had that many men working for him already, he probably wouldn't have much use for me.
Hey, Brett. Brett Ponson.
Howdy, Gid.
Where in the name of Moses you come from, Brett?
Oh, no place special. I was laying some railroad track out of Denver for a spell, but then I thought it was about time for me to hit the saddle again.
Well, if you're looking for a job, we can always use an extra hand, can't we, boys?
Well, it's mighty nice of you, Gid. To tell you the truth, I was sort of hoping that you had room for enough.
Well, go on, Britt.
Oh. I guess you've got enough help here without me.
Well, my outfit's been growing since you were through here last. But we're stretched clear over to Apache Hill.
You don't say.
Yeah, it takes a lot of riders to cover that much ground.
Yeah, I guess it does.
Oh, come on then, let's go. We're on our way back to the 77 right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe next roundup, Gid.
What's the matter with you, Britt? You said you were looking for work.
I reckon I must change Ponsett's mind, Gid. I reckon he's a little too fancy to ride alongside me.
Huh?
How about it, Six Shooter?
You boys know each other?
We've met up. Well, take it easy, Gid. I'll be saying.
Now, hold up a minute, Brett. You go ahead, boys. I'll catch up with you. I want to talk with Ponson.
You're wasting your breath.
I'm still boss of the 77, Clint. I don't need no advice from you.
Sure, Gid, sure.
Better cup of coffee, Brett.
Oh, thanks. I guess I could use one.
Yes. Christian ain't the best cook in the world. He can usually get his coffee down without it gagging you.
All right, Chris, you still run the cafe, huh?
Sure. Town ain't changed much, Britt. On the surface, that is.
Oh.
Oh, well, come on in, Mr. Bascom. Come on in.
Hello, Christy. You remember Britt Ponsett?
Britt, well, for goodness sakes, when did you get back to town?
Oh, just a little while ago, Christy. Ah, you're sure looking well.
So there's a fiddle, Mr. Ponsett. Fit as a fiddle. Now, you both sit down at that table over there, and I'll bring you some of my special for today, beef stew. I made it fresh this morning.
No, thanks, Christy. We just come in for some coffee.
Why, it's after 4:00. It's practically time for supper.
Yeah, our coffee will do the trick for now.
Oh. Well, what about you, Mr. Ponsett? A little taste of my stew?
No. I think I'll just stick to coffee, too.
Oh, okay. Well, the pot's on the stove out in back. I'll get it.
No hurry. Well, Britt?
Hmm?
Is Clint right? Is it on account of him you don't want to work for me?
I never said that, Gid.
You sure acted it.
Well, to tell you the truth, I was sort of surprised that you'd hire a man like Clint Sutton.
Britt, I just didn't have no choice.
Oh?
Like I told you, the 77's been growing. When a ranch gets big, well, I guess a man's bound to make enemies. He needs somebody who's handy with a gun around.
Mm-hmm. You never had any enemies before, Gid.
Yeah, well, times are different now, Britt.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you remember those sod busters down by the creek, Perry Waddell and Fred Garver?
Sure.
Well, there's been some new ones move in the last year or so.
Well, that isn't your land along the creek, is it?
No. Never claimed it was. I always figured there was plenty of space around here. Room enough for me and them nesters, too.
Well?
Well, I ain't been like some of the other ranches. You know that, Britt. I ain't never tried to run the sod busters off or burn them out. Live and let live, that's what I always said. I try to practice my preaching, too.
Here's your coffee, Jack. Right off the stove. You sure you won't have nothing else?
Oh, thanks, Christy. Here you go.
No, hold
Keep
on.
Keep your hands
hold
away from your pockets, Britt. I guess I can afford a couple of cups of coffee.
Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Vaskin. Hey, see, I've got some bread in the oven, so if you want anything more, you just follow.
Boy.
I bet his saucer is for a spell. Let it cool off some, huh?
Wow. Man, it's not the heat, it's the taste. Gee, whiz, that stuff's... Well, it's as bad as the coffee I make myself. Worse.
Yeah, I guess it's a good thing we didn't order none of Christie's, too.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway, Britt, about Clint Sutton. Now, there was a good reason for hiring him. They've been stealing my cattle.
They what?
Yeah, the nesters.
Now,
there ain't any doubt about it. My tallies are short. After the roundup, I'll know for certain how many they got away with.
Well, now, Gid, it doesn't stand to reason that men like Waddell and Garver would rustle your animals. They're in a rough spot as it is, and they're living right next to the edge of your ranch. Well, they must know that you could shove them off of there if you took a mind to it.
I guess they know that, all right. Anyway, one of them tried to shoot me.
Were you sure of that?
No, I didn't see who it was, not for certain. But there ain't been any strangers around Halfway Creek lately, so...
Sutton's a stranger.
I hired him after the shooting. I had to have somebody, Britt. My own boys ain't very fast with a gun. They ain't had much experience lately.
Now, Gid, you're just asking for trouble bringing Clint Sutton in here.
Britt, the trouble's already started, and I didn't start it. They did. Of course, if I had known you were coming into town, I wouldn't have taken Clint on.
Well, if what you wanted was a gun, I'm not the man for you. And I reckon Clint is.
Well, that's the way you feel, Britt.
That's the way I feel.
Maybe you'll change your mind after things quiet down. Oh, maybe there won't be a serious mix-up now that them sod-busters know that I mean business.
I wouldn't count on that yet. Well, thanks for the coffee. Well, it was getting on toward evening now, and I was beginning to feel some hunger pains down the pit of my stomach. Oh, I sure didn't like the idea of sampling Christy Ott's stew, though. I figured I'd be better off to buy some cold grub at the general store, so I headed across the street. Just as I started to go in the front door, I saw somebody staring at me from behind a wagon over to the blacksmith shop. Sun was directly behind him, so I couldn't tell who it was exactly, not until he came around into the shade.
Britt? That you, Britt?
Huh? Yeah.
Well, don't you recognize me? Perry Waddell?
Oh. Oh, sure, Perry. Oh, the sun was in my eyes. I couldn't see it.
You busy, Britt?
No, not especially.
Well, I'd like to talk to you if you got a minute spare. Busted one of my wagon wheels this morning. I'm waiting for Sam Todd to see if he can put it together.
Mm-hmm. Well, how have things been going with you, Perry?
Not so good, Britt. Not so good.
Yeah, I was just talking to Gid Baskin. What's behind that trouble, anyway?
Same old story, I reckon. Big ranch, small farms, there just ain't room for them both.
Well, there's always plenty of room before. Perry, Gid tells me that some of his cattle are missing.
Oh, that's just his excuse to get rid of us.
Uh-huh.
And I ain't no thief, Britt.
Oh, of course not, Perry. But I understand that they've been some new families moving in, is that right?
Any farmer who'd steal from Gid's herd, he'd be plumb loco. He'd just be asking for Gid to burn him out.
Yeah, that's true enough.
I suppose Gid told you somebody took a shot at him, too, and said it was one of us.
He mentioned something about it, yeah.
He just needed a reason for bringing that Clint Sutton in here. Clint's a killer, pure and simple. Think bad enough that Gid wants our land, he's got to hire a gunfighter to take it away from us.
Well, Gid never objected to your farms before, Perry. Well,
there was always plenty of other land waiting for him. Now he's pushed his ranch clear to Apache Hill. He can't go no farther in that direction, so he's got to spread east. And we're in his way.
That just somehow doesn't sound like Gid. He sure seems sincere when I talk to him. Now, I'm almost certain he believes somebody's been rustling his cattle.
Britt, I swear to you that I never so much as laid a hand on any of his stock.
Well, that's none of my concern, Perry. I've seen I'm leaving town anyway.
Well, you can't leave, Britt. You've got to stay here.
I what?
You're the only man who can stand up to Bascom. and Sutton.
Oh, now hold on, Perry.
Oh, we couldn't pay you much, but we'd all chip in and give you what we can.
I told Gid I'm not a hired gun. I've got to tell you the same thing.
Britt, my farm's all I've got in this world. I spent 21 years trying to build it up into something that'd mean a decent living for my wife and kids. Nobody's going to take it away from me now.
Well, I understand that. I understand. Huh. Hey, look at that. Looks like somebody's in a rush, huh?
Yeah. It's Rufe Lovett.
Oh?
Oh, he's homesteading the place right next to mine. Rufe! Rufe, what's your hurry?
Yeah, I gotta see you, Perry.
Sure?
Yeah, but it's real important.
Well, I was just going into the store anyway, so
no
I'll
need
see you
for
later.
You to rush off, Britt. Rufe, this here's Britt Ponsett. You can speak your mind in front of him.
Six-shooter?
That's right.
Real pleased to meet you, Mr. Ponsett.
Howdy.
Now, what's all the fuss about, Rufe?
They're gonna burn us out tonight, Perry.
You what? Sure?
Yeah, one of Gid's own men told me.
Well, I was just talking to Gid just a little while ago, Rufe. He never had any intention then.
Yeah, maybe he's changed his mind since then, Mr. Ponsett, or maybe he didn't feel like advertising what he's up to. Now, Perry, we got to get together, all us farmers.
Oh, sure, Rufe, sure. We'll hold them off.
Hold them off? Why, we wouldn't have a chance against a man like Clint Sutton.
Well, we got to do something. We got to fight back.
Yeah, we'll fight back, all right, but on our own ground.
What do you mean?
Well, they'll be riding toward our farms tonight, Gid and all his boys. There won't be a soul over at the 77.
Yeah?
We'll show Gid Bascom he ain't gonna have everything his way. We'll burn him out while he's burning us.
Oh, Rufe,
I sure don't see what you'll accomplish by that, Rufe.
Why, Gid'll think twice before he tries to shove somebody else around. That's what we'll accomplish.
Maybe so, but it won't save your farm.
Well, what else can we do?
Well, you might try talking to Gid, see if you can find out what's eating.
Well, talk's a waste of time.
Oh, I don't know, Rufe. Maybe he'll listen to reason.
Has he ever listened to us before?
Well...
Besides, what about Clint Sutton? Who's going to reason with that gun of his?
Yeah, I kind of forgot about Clint. Britt?
Now, Perry...
Britt, talking to Gid is your idea.
Yeah, I know it is. I know, but I... Oh, doggone it, Perry... All right, I'll see if I can head him off. Now, you and Rufe go back to your farm. Stay put, huh?
Okay, Mr. Ponsett.
You don't know how much this means to us, Britt.
Yeah, I see.
We'll return to James Stewart as the six-shooter in just a moment. If you're a teenager or up, a loyal American, male or female, your country needs you in the Civilian Ground Observer Corps. You've heard the radio broadcasts, seen the television pictures. You know the facts. You know what a single H-bomb dropped in any metropolitan area could do. And today's long-range bombers have made intercontinental war possible. Enemy planes based on the other side of the world could reach the United States in a matter of hours. Radar can help detect them. But there are dangerous gaps through which low-flying planes can penetrate without detection. To fill out our detection system, civilian personnel is needed, particularly along the east and west coasts and in the northern states. Sky watching is not a game, it's a necessary precaution. The Ground Observer Corps is now operating on a 24-hour-a-day basis and needs at least 200,000 volunteers to contribute a few hours of their spare time to this vital work. Will you volunteer? Get in touch with your local civilian defense. Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Gid Bascom's ranch house is about a three-hour ride from town, so around about 8 o'clock, I figure I'm halfway there. The moon was just beginning to silver up the top of Apache Hill. I hadn't been too sure of the trail, but now that things were lightening up some, I gave Scarlet a nudge. Come on, let's go. Come on. It was real sandy country. A clump of purple sage every now and then, once in a while a pine tree or two, and we must have covered about 4 miles, and then we came to a little creek. From there on, the trail started to wind into a kind of a jagged ravine with a couple of tall yellow rocks at the mouth.
sort of sticking up straight in the air like a couple of fingers. We were just getting past those rocks when I heard what sounded like about a half a dozen horses coming toward me. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Bull's gone. I pulled up and waited. Oh.
Howdy, Ged.
What are you doing out here, Britt?
Oh, I just thought I might come out and take a look at the 77.
Some other time.
You, in a hurry to go somewhere?
That's right, we're in a hurry.
Oh. Oh, hello, Clint.
Come on, Ged, we ain't got all night. Right.
You mind telling me where you're heading, Ged?
Well, look, I offered you a job this afternoon. You turned me down. I don't see where anything I do from here on in is your concern.
No, 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 sure isn't. But I was just noticing, and it looks to me like you've got the whole crew with you.
What if I have?
Well, that must be something kind of important to take you all the way out here, away from the ranch this time of night.
We're going
to
burn out a bunch of thieving rustlers. Is that important enough for you, Ponsett?
Thanks.
Now, they might as well know it. You can't do nothing to stop us.
What happened, Ged? You weren't planning anything like this when I talked to you a little while ago.
Clint found five of my steers over in a canyon behind one of them farms.
Well, maybe your steers got lost. Maybe they just strayed over that way.
And hobbled themselves?
Well, even so, it seems to me like this is a matter for the law.
There ain't no sheriff in Halfway Creek. You know that, Brits.
Well, there's a sheriff at Bixby Falls. Somebody go over and get him.
You get him if you want him, Ponsett. We got other things to do.
Now...
Come on, Ged.
Now, I wouldn't let Clint hurry me if I was you, Ged.
What difference does it make?
It might make a lot of difference. Seeing as how those farmers were talking about paying you back if you go after them.
I'd sure like to know what they could do.
Well, they sort of had an idea that they could burn down the 77.
What? Well, they sure must want to get themselves killed.
Uh-huh. It doesn't look to me like there'd be anybody there to kill them, Sutton.
Look, he's lying. He's just trying to stall us.
That's right. Do you think I'm lying, Ged?
Turn around, boys. We're going back to the ranch. Well, you're crazy. Get them nesters with me.
I said turn around.
Now, let's go.
Well, I watched them for a minute or two, moving along through the ravine, heading back to the 77. I could hear Clint arguing with Ged, and Ged didn't seem to be paying much attention to him. Then I swung Scar around toward Halfway Creek. Must have been about 30 minutes later when we came down to a narrow stretch of trail that twisted down the side of the cliff. Easy, easy, boy. Easy. The moon was sliding under a thick milk-white cloud, and the rocks and the trees started fading into night shadows. For a minute or so, everything got real still. Even the crickets... Somebody else was taking the same trail. Sounded like he was following me. I got a kind of a crickly feeling across the back of my neck. I started wondering maybe Clint Sutton. I twisted around to see if I could get a look. I had to squint my eyes, but finally I made out the shape of a horse about 40 feet back. He was just standing there, nibbling on a couple of tufts of grass. Wasn't anybody in the saddle. And right then, the cloud over the moon started skidding away, and the trees began coming back to size. I was just about to give Scar a touch of the spur when I saw him, crouching low behind a clump of pines. I saw something else, too, a little glint of metal. Whoever it was had a gun. I jerked out of the saddle and hit the ground. Looked around for cover. His aim was close. It was too darn close. Well, it couldn't be Sutton. I knew Clint's style of gunplay. He might miss one shot, and he wouldn't miss twice. And then I spotted a little gully a few feet to my left, and I crawled toward it, keeping as low as I could. I was almost there before he had a chance to fire again. When he did, I started rolling, and I tumbled down into the draw. I took out my gun. I was hoping he'd think he'd hit me, but his bullet had sent me over the side. I couldn't hear him move. I pressed flat and I pulled up behind a couple of big tumbleweeds. I sort of cut down my chance of him spotting me. He was coming now. He was going to be at the edge of the gully in a couple more steps. I shoved my gun up and sort of gauged where I thought he'd show. Then a leg came into sight. About more than 6 feet away. His body swung up into view.
And just before he fired, he went down on his knees fast. I swung out of the way, and his bullet cut through one of the tumbleweeds. I gave it a shove, and the wind sort of caught it. He fired again. He wasn't firing at me now. He's firing at the weed. And he had to rise up into sight to get aim. Yeah, my bullet slapped him on the shoulder, and for a minute he sort of hung in midair and teetering on the edge of the draw. And then he pitched forward and toppled down beside me. And I turned him over and got a look at his face. Well, what the thunder are you trying to do, Rufe? You should have been able to recognize me. It wasn't as dark as all that.
I recognized you, Ponson.
What?
You shouldn't have meddled in this. Gid would have burned us out if it hadn't been for you stopping him.
Well, you wanted him to burn you out?
It's going to happen anyway, ain't it? Sooner or later.
Well, not if Gid isn't forced into it.
Big ranchers don't need no forcing.
What are you talking about? I don't understand you, Ruth. It was your farm he was going to burn. You're talking like that you hoped it would happen.
You think I care about that farm? I had me a farm once down in Texas. Real good soil, brown, soft, rich, plenty of water, too. Man could grow anything on that land.
Well, what happened to it?
Well, there was a ranch, bigger than Gid's outfit even. But it wasn't big enough. Not big enough to suit the fellow on that. He kept stretching out, crawling down from the hills, moving his fences closer and closer till one day they was right up against my property. He offered to buy me out. He offered me good money, but it was my farm. I didn't want to sell no matter what he was willing to pay me.
Here, come on. Now, pull out your shirt, Terry. I'll try and see if I can get that bleeding to stop.
Yeah.
You think you'll be able to ride?
I don't know. Give me a couple of minutes.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, go on. Now, you were telling me about your farm down in Texas.
Well, ain't much more to tell. I wouldn't sell it. Nancy, she was my wife. She told me I was wrong. I'd have to give in, but I didn't listen to her. I should have listened. It burned us out.
I see.
I wasn't there when it happened. I was in town. Nancy, she tried to stop him. He killed her.
Well, I'm sorry, Lovett.
He killed her and left her there in the house while they burned it. Couldn't even give her a decent burial. There was...
Now, take it easy, Ruth.
Don't matter what becomes of me, Ponson, not anymore. After Nancy... Well, afterwards, I come up here to New Mexico. Figured maybe I could start over. Maybe things would be different, but there wasn't no different. There's always a ranch and a fellow like Gid Bascom to shove you around. I watched him. Watched him spreading out clear to Apache Hills, and then he couldn't go no further in that direction. I knowed he'd be coming my way. Well, I wasn't just going to sit around and wait for him like I'd done before.
So you stole Gid's cattle. Is that what you're saying?
Didn't have nothing to lose. I was going to be burned out anyways. I even took a shot at him, but ain't much good with a gun. I just kind of showed that tonight.
Well, it wasn't Gid that burned you out down in Texas, Rue.
Luke was a rancher just like Gid. They're all the same, Ponset, with their grabbing, burning, and killing. I figured if I stirred up enough trouble to force Gid out in the open, maybe then some of the other farmers would come along with me and we'd burn him up. He'd get a taste of his own medicine. I'd be paying Gid back for what he'd done to Nancy.
But, Rufe, I'm...
I can still see how it was that night. Smoke and ashes everywhere. First, I couldn't believe it that they killed her. I started to holler and holler until my throat was so sore the sound just wouldn't come out no more. But she didn't answer me. I thought maybe she'd run off somewhere as they'd scared her, and she'd run away. And then I saw her over behind a pile of smoking timbers. Her clothes was all burned up. That's what he'd done. That's what Gid had done.
That wasn't Gid Bascom. Now, get a hold of yourself.
I've got to make it up for Nancy. I got to burn the 77.
Well, you're coming to town with me.
Town?
Come on now. Can you stand up?
I guess so. Who are you?
You come along. Here, let me give you a hand.
Well, what about Luke Harper?
Luke Harper?
You ain't been listening to me.
I told you, I've got to get even with Harper for killing my wife. That's what I was going to do tonight, burn down his ranch. Now, I told you.
I know, yeah. Now, you told me. But you just better forget about that for now. No?
Well, I couldn't forget, not ever.
Come on, Earl. Come on, you and me are going to town.
Huh?
Here, I'll help you on your horse here. Come on.
Thanks, mister. Thanks a lot. You've been real kind to... Funny. There's something wrong with my shoulder. Somebody shot me. Did Luke Harper do that, mister?
Maybe he did, Ruth. In a way, maybe he did.
I took Rufe as far as Perry Waddell's house, and Perry went in to get the doc. It looked like Rufe was going to be all right. At least, it looked like he'd get over that wound in the shoulder. But whether he'd really ever get well again, I guess even the doctor couldn't tell that. The next morning, Gid Bascom rode into town, found out what had happened. He said he was willing to forget about the stolen cattle and the other trouble Rufe had caused him. And he said he'd get rid of Clint Sutton, too. He didn't come right out and admit it, but I've got a hunch he was kind of sorry that he'd hired Sutton in the first place. It just goes to show you there's differences in ranchers like anything else.
The Six Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is written by Frank Burtz and is based on a character created by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Lamont Johnson, Gerald Moore, Bob Griffin, Parley Bear, and Howard McNear. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. Oh, by the way, you'll be interested in knowing that the Six Shooter has been chosen for broadcast to our men overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is Hal Gibney speaking. Hearing Time brings you highlights from the Senate committee hearings tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
From May 13th, 1954 on NBC, Jimmy Stewart starring as The Six Shooter, broadcast entitled Ranchers vs. Sodbusters. That episode airing near the end of that series run. As I said, it was a short-lived series. It only ran for one season on NBC during 1953 and 54, and for much of that season, it didn't have a regular sponsor. Unfortunately, by this time, interest in radio drama was beginning to wane, mainly due to a new medium called television. And with that, we come to the end of this hour of the program. I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. I hope you can join me again soon for another trip back through time to that wonderful, magical era known as the Golden Age of Radio. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.